It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And if you have, and I can be found on Twitter at Matthew Sosi, and of course on Facebook. Joining me in studio, ladies and gentlemen, it is a bit of my career past hanging out with me, and I will explain why. She is a lady of many, many skills and many delights, and at times many different colored hair. She's from the Mrs. Slocum line of hair color, but Renaissance woman Taffeta V is hanging out. How are you, my dear?
I am very well, and I love that you referenced Mrs. Slocum.
We
are
have
you
to
being
here.
Served?
We have to do that here.
Very nice.
Because actually, this a long, long time ago, once upon a time, ladies and gentlemen, many, many moons ago, when I first moved here to Indianapolis to be with the lovely Mrs. Sosi, this station, WFYI, at one time would play back-to-back episodes of Are You Being Served every Monday through Fridays at 11 o'clock. So Lynn and I knew this was our wind-down time. You know, after a long day of doing what Lynn does and doing what I do, this would be our time. And so they would do this. They would run this all, did this for many years. Uh-huh. So they would do it all year. And then in the summer, we would take a break from the department store, and then they would show As Time Goes By. And then we go right back into it. So I think my wife and I have seen every episode of Are You Being Served at least 9 times.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It was a great show.
So, and as I was starting out in my young film writing renaissance jerk of all trades career, a lovely young lady who worked at a book chain that's no longer in business saw it upon herself to give this little street urchin with an attitude a chance to have a public forum and host film discussions and music discussions. And she helped kind of launch this creature. So thank you, dear.
Well, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. It was always a lot of fun. And maybe my favorite one. Do you remember when we did the blues for babies?
I do. I do. I did that twice because I did it up here in Castleton and I did it down in Greenwood. And the Greenwood one, I wound up getting a teaching gig because of that.
No.
At the old RIP Meridian Academy of the Arts in
Is
Greenwood.
That right?
That's right.
Oh.
So...
That makes me happy.
Totally. And so I've clawed my way to the middle. But yeah, oh, totally remember that. But no, she is hanging out. And she is actually, before I get to the new stuff, I know you're about ready to launch your website and you got a zine in the works. Please tell us what you've been up to, Mildier.
Well, for the past... a little over a decade, maybe 12 or 13 years, I have lived in Seattle, even though I'm originally from Indianapolis. And out there, I have been a professional costume designer and wardrobe mistress. I primarily serve the cabaret and burlesque and drag communities, mm-hmm. And just can't even tell you how much fun that was.
Not without slides.
Yeah. Well, I have some. Then have moved back here to be near family. And so I'm still continuing to do costume design and wardrobe mistressing, but branching out a little bit as well. So I have a website that is my name. It is taffetav.com. And so there you can see examples of my work on beautiful bodies.
And it's V-E-E.
No.
No, it isn't.
No, sir.
I take it back.
No, I am wrong.
That's why it's your website.
That's
Go
right.
on. Sorry.
So spelled out, it's Taffeta, TAFFETAV.com.
Facebook be damned.
Yes, Facebook be damned. And so, like I said, there you can see pictures of my work on beautiful bodies and a number of things that I have done. I'm also on the Twitter and the Instagram.
You're an old person.
That's right. The Twitters and the Instagrams at Taffeta V. Mm-hmm. And on Facebook, I am Taffeta the Wardrobe Mistress. And
Careful. There's another mistress that ticks off Abdul-Kim Shabazz here in Indy, but we won't talk about that.
It's a multi-purpose title.
Right.
So there, like I said, you can see examples of my work. I've got a zine coming out that will be at the, Albuquerque Zine Fest the first week of October, and then the New Orleans Zine Fest in the middle of November. That's going to be just sort of my personal obsessions about clothing with narratives.
So you have a zine fest, and I'm semi-serious when I ask this. Is it, do you bring physical samples, or do you bring your laptop to show your website zine?
No. This is actually hearkening back to real-life objects, to zines. And I find that really compelling right now. I have a love-hate relationship with the interwebs. And sometimes blogginess feels like screaming into the void with a bunch of other voices that I don't like.
Right.
So taking it out of that kind of an atmosphere and making real live objects. Plus, I am a woman of a certain age. So in the 90s, the zines were big, and I was a little too busy with my work at the Dead Bookstore.
The kids are wearing the fashions again.
I know. It's killing me.
The high-waisted jeans and chokers.
I'm dying over here.
Fortunately, I've not said to my daughter or her friends, you look like girls I chased when I was in school.
Don't say that.
I won't say that.
Creepy.
Mr. Creepy. Emma's not listening. It's fine.
Okay. So real life zines will be going to these zine fests, which is a lot of fun. And then, this is fun.
Yes.
On Thanksgiving weekend here in Indianapolis at the Windham, I am going to be judging a costume contest at the Starbase Indie Convention, which is a Star Trek themed science enthusiast convention.
Oh,
so this
God,
is right up
there.
My alley. Yeah.
What color will you be painted?
Actually, I no longer paint my entire self, and I recently retired my uniform that I usually wear to these kinds of things, which was a classic Trek uniform with tribbles. I think you've seen it.
Yes, I have definitely seen it.
I might be pulling out a full Lwaxana Troi for this one. Oh, you know you love it.
Yes, dear. Yes, I do.
Okay.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you need, if Lois Maxwell and Betty Page had a kid and was raised by Eve Arden, she's right here.
By Edith
right.
Head, yes.
Right. You're basically rolling your eyes at Doris Day on every move she does.
Precisely. I love Andorra. She's one of my style icons. You laugh, but I love Andorra.
Of course you do. Yeah. Who doesn't?
So Agnes Moorehead was a huge influence.
See, when every role my wife has, she is, of course, the most beautiful one, the most beautiful
she
Gertrude,
is.
The hottest. I remember she was hot Parthy. And she did it at Beef and Boards. And, of course, my wife's response was Agnes Moorehead, Cloris Leachman, Nancy Culp. Not a big race.
I love Cloris Leachman, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. She's Betty White, but a little cheaper.
I love a little cheapness because I was always way more John Waters than John Hughes.
That is true. But yeah, I would say everybody talks about Betty White. Cloris has been doing it as well.
That's
never forget that.
Yeah.
So, Yeah. So anyway, you need Taffet in your life. Go check her out there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. And trust me, the whole show is going to be like this. opening in theaters this week, looking at, it's funny, my daughter and I just got off a run of doing Fiddler on the Roof at Richmond Civic. And there's a film over at the Art House Theater up on the north side of town called Minutia. And it's a story. It's set in the New York City community in Borough Park. And we have a gentleman who is just, he is a widower with a kid, stuck in a job at a convenience store in his neighborhood, just trying to get his life together. Dating is not going well. The son is living with his family who has better means. And this is a film, it's not going to open in 2,000 theaters. Or 200 theaters. Well, maybe 200 theaters, but we'll see. But it is the fact that it's a combination of old and new with the Hasidic world in New York. But it is very tight-knit. It is very closed out to the rest of the community, if possible. And this guy is just trying to carve out a living and trying to raise his kid. He's not perfect, and he knows it, and you see that. I think one of the quotes that's in the film from his more well-to-do brother-in-law, the Gentiles have broken homes. That's why there's a broken society. And so seeing him prepare, he's also at clash with his family because it is custom that it's going to be the anniversary of his wife's death, and he wants to hold the memorial at his tiny, tiny, dingy apartment, not at the brownstone that the family has. So... it's a family drama. It may not be your family drama, but it might,
right?
Regardless of the religion and regardless of your own background. So,
character study,
very, very good character study. And again, taps it into a world we don't really see a whole lot of. And it's definitely worth checking out. So that is the alternative. And usually August is a dumping ground. Although it's gotten better. I enjoyed Logan Lucky, which opened last week.
Oh, I haven't seen that one
yet.
Yes.
The question is, Steven Soderbergh, about 10 minutes in, is Steven Soderbergh making a white trash version of Ocean's 11? And he would stare you in the face and say, yes, I am. And it's fun. The guy's done a heist. Well, he's made three heist films, and now he's made a fourth. And it's funny. It's well done. I think you get past the low-hanging fruit, which are people from West Virginia and certain parts of North Carolina, and Daniel Craig with bad tattoos. But it's fun, and it fits out for the month of August.
Excellent. You know, I always like the soundtracks to Soderbergh films.
Yes.
I've done a lot of sewing to the soundtrack from the first Ocean's 11. That's good stuff there.
Yes, that is. I believe that is old. What is Kobe watching music for you longtime film sociology fans? So anyway, that is Minutia. Minutia is in theaters this weekend. And I'm an old person because I'm learning to find films that are now available on cable, or I'm sorry, on television. The Socies got rid of cable this summer, so we...
Ooh, so did we.
So we are on the Netflix, Hulu, Amazon path, and... but I still hold physical copies. I'm sorry. Don't look at my house. It's one of those things. But I did come across a documentary I had heard about, and I finally got to see, and it's available online. The documentary Becoming Bond, about George Lazenby.
Oh, yes. That was excellent.
Yes. It's basically, we've seen these before, where it's basically a one-man show. It is George Lazenby talking about his life and his career, everything before he got to do James Bond in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and then kind of a quick wrap-up of what he did after.
Yeah.
When you have a one-person talking show, whether it's De Palma hat, there was one about De Palma a while back. The Errol Morris ones are a lot. There are a lot of those. John Greenbaum in this film has a lot. It's probably even if it's not equal time, if not more so, of recreations of Lazenby's life as a kid,
yeah.
And then during his at the height of his career. The film. This is tough because I think the subject is fascinating. I think Lord Lazenby gets a bad rap and the film gets a bad rap. But this one, there's a lot of time. I mean, really a lot. And I have a feeling there's no deleted scenes if you were to buy this on disc.
There was no editing.
I think he used everything. And you could have done the Judd Apatow thing. You could have at least sliced 20 minutes off at the beginning because we're seeing him at school with his first love. And I know there is a through line over the relationships with women in his life. I think there was probably a bit of me that wanted more of the career, especially post Bond, because it. Anyway,
I liked that one. I agree. I felt that there were flaws in it
because I think it's 50 minutes in before we get to about the offer to play Bond.
And I admit that when I pulled it up to watch, I was very excited. Enormous Bond fan from always. And I actually really love Majesty's Secret Service. It's one of my favorites of all the Bond movies. So I was very excited. And right off the top, you start with some of these reenactment situations in this documentary.
And there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. And I was really challenged by that. While I appreciate it from the perspective of the filmmaker trying to sort of make a meal of this documentary, and that might have been entertaining or good for them. As an audience member, I was challenged by that. It was not maybe my favorite thing, and I wanted a little more of, the sort of interview situation. Let's hear about what got you to Bond a little bit more. Let's hear about your Bond experience. And then post, which was really notable because he had sort of gone hippie.
Right. So there was a thing. He started out as a male model in Australia and was huge at that. And the way he got in for auditions, and by the way, his casting agent, his agent in the film is played by Jane Seymour. Hashtag stunt casting. But he's able to kind of weasel his way in and get the role. Jeff Garland plays Harry Saltzman, the producer. And it talks a little bit about the making of the film, but it also brings up, of course, now by the late 60s, by the time Honor Majesty's Secret Services, the studio system was pretty much dead.
Yeah.
And it was becoming a more director's market, auteur market. But there was still elements of a studio or a producer having their say on how you looked, how you dressed.
Right.
And they wanted George Lazenby to look like James Bond on the interview circuit to promote the film. And he grew his beard out, grew his hair out. And a lot of people say that was his downfall. He was offered apparently a 6-picture deal to play James Bond and
turned it down.
Said on the Tonight Show, I believe, that this was just going to be the only one and done. That's pretty, you got to have serious onions to pull something like that.
Well, you do, but when you think about the time, I was a mere babe in arms then, mind you.
We know.
But when you do think about the time and that he was involved in this studio system that was very much a conservative holdover, and then the whole Ian Fleming character of Bond being this conservative holdover, but out there in the world, you're having some of the most amazing movies being made. Mm-hmm. Really roguish stuff, given the time. More youth-oriented, far more counterculture-oriented.
Yep.
And that's, one sense is, where he was personally aligned. And then the studio was trying to drag him back, and it just did not work out. I would like to have heard more about that.
I would have as well.
Yeah.
So I guess, when we look for the home video copy of this, I do. We will see if there's deleted scenes or what have you. I just wanted to hear how he shot his cameo in Kentucky Fried Movie,
or working with
Jim Kelly in one of the films that he did in the Philippines. So, but I have the feeling I may be wrong, but I have the feeling the director had Lazenby for one day and paid him X amount of dollars, and he was going to get every single cent he could out of
it. Feels a little like that when you watch it. Yeah,
but as he said, as Lazenby says near the end of the film, You can defy what people expect you to do and write your own story. And that's kind of, so I was glad we got to hear Lazenby's story.
Yeah.
And if you get a chance, On Her Majesty's Secret Service is, from a technical standpoint, one of the best Bond films.
Absolutely.
Lazenby, and it didn't matter if it was Lazenby or anybody else who was rumored at that time to replace Connery, they didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to give the guy who followed Sean Connery a chance. So Lazenby, in a way, was kind of a sacrificial lamb. So then when they brought Sean back for a lot of money, and then it made a smoother transition. It made things easier for Roger Moore to become Bond. It also helped that he had already a background with the Saint.
I have to ask you who your favorite Bond was.
I'm a Connery guy. I'm a Connery guy, but I still think Skyfall is the best made Bond film.
Love
that's
it.
A film that's not only the best shot Bond film, I thought it should have been, it was my number two film of the year that year. I thought it should have been up for Best Picture. Javier Bardem should have been nominated because you have a fine director with Sam Mendes.
Yes.
You have real actors surrounding him. Yes, there are good looking
models.
Villain.
A real
creepy villain yeah. with Javier Bardem. You know, Judi Dench,
we
Albert
get to
Finney,
see more of
Ralph
them.
Fiennes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
Emma.
Yes. I mean, it's just heads and tails above what we grew up with. One of my favorite
Agreed.
Cinematic experiences of all time. I got to see Skyfall in advance. And then I got to, and I had gotten my daughter hooked on the Bond films. Thank you, Spy Kids. Because
oh, nice.
She likes Spy Kids. And then I finally said, do you want to know where it comes from? And I showed her Goldfinger. And she started pointing out, oh, that's this. Oh, that's that. And
is that Robert Rodriguez, Spy Kids?
Oh. Yep.
My favorite.
She liked those three pictures, and then showing her, and then we started plowing through the Connerys, and she's like, "Oh, that's from this, that's from that."
Yeah.
So she was really a Bond fan at an early age.
Excellent.
But one of my favorite experiences of all time is because I had already seen it, and then we went opening week, I believe, and then I took Lynn and Emma, but it was me watching Emma watch Skyfall, watch the opening chase, watch finding out. That you know, that Judi Dench's name is M. Watch it. That you turned into Naomi Harris. You know, all that. It was so
the
fun.
Opening credits, seeing that, and the song,
and Adele doing her best Shirley Bassey. And
look, I love me some Shirley Bassey, and I think isn't Adele coming back for the song in the next one?
I don't know. I haven't checked on who, because now that Daniel's back,
right?
And it shouldn't be a shock. Not the first time it's happened with an actor playing James Bond.
Sure.
Won't be the last.
Yeah.
So your thoughts on Skyfall?
I love Skyfall. It's one of my absolute favorites. I think Javier is beyond amazing. The scene, the one shot where he comes down the elevator
and then walks over.
Yep. Oh, dreamy, dreamy. I absolutely adore it. I do feel a little like it's a movie in two parts. We have, you know, the whole beginning of it, and then we have the sort of extended, almost Home Alone scenario at the end.
Okay, I hadn't heard that one. I like that it's compared to Home Alone.
Well, you know, it
right,
is
stuck in a well. Then Straw Dogs or Rio
oh,
Bravo.
Straw, okay,
or,
maybe Straw Dogs.
Okay,
would
a little
be the
less
better.
Rapey than
yeah,
Straw Dogs.
A little less. But I absolutely love that one. I think it is fantastic. It's one of my favorite. I'm a huge Bond fan. It should also be noted, Matthew. What have you called me for the past 25 years?
Moneypenny.
That's correct.
That's the if Lois Maxwell and Betty Page had a kid.
Yes. I really enjoyed that one. I'm also a big fan of Casino Royale.
Yeah.
That comeback to me was so strong, and that opening chase is just amazing. The cold open in black and white, I think, is terrific. And as I understand it, I haven't read as much of the Fleming as I would have liked, but as I understand it, this Bond is a little more closely aligned with the original.
He's a knuckle-dragging sadist.
Yeah, he's just a goon.
Yeah.
You know, a sociopath, a high-functioning sociopath who does a job.
And when he gets hit in the testicles with a giant rope and all he does is just laugh,
Mads. Oh, can we? I have deep love of Mads Mikkelsen. Deep love. And any villain crying tears. So both Casino, Tears of Blood, like that is a terrific villain.
Mm-hmm.
But Casino Royale and Skyfall rank as some of my favorites overall, even when compared with some of the classic Sean Connerys.
Yep.
Of course, I love Goldfinger. It's almost stupid to say that. Everybody loves Goldfinger.
Right.
But I have a huge soft spot for Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah,
I think it's underrated.
It is really underrated because you have Diana Rigg, which is always great.
Lair.
I
love the lairs in all of the Bond films, that's one of my favorite lairs.
It's the first Bond film with skiing.
Yeah.
And you know,
and Union Jacks.
Well, it's funny to show it to somebody considerably younger, like Emma.
Yeah,
she will point out that's green screen. Yeah, it's green screen. We understand that. So
right. That's
what you did back then. They had that for driving scenes because it's cheaper. But the evolution of Bond and skiing, I mean, that was a start. But I don't think there had been – that was the same year as Downhill Racer. So, you know, skiing in cinema –
it was new.
I think it was fairly new, especially when you had some ability to put a camera on a hill. But –
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, Diana Rigg worked really well, and Telly Savalas is fine as the second Blofeld.
Terrific Blofeld.
And,
yeah.
You know, a kick to the chest of an ending, spoiler alert, on a film 37 years ago, 47 years ago.
It was a great way to do it, though, because I love any time a film does not romanticize a death. I like the shock of it.
Mm-hmm.
I like the immediacy of it. And I like that we feel that imperceptible change in Bond where, like, he had fallen in love, he had gotten married, and then now it's all over. And he is just going to be a killer
and
from
now on. And he turns Scottish again.
Well, yeah.
And he turns Scottish with a bigger hairpiece and starts thrashing around Vegas. So, but and in a way that kind of, I mean, when they had to make the reboot mm-hmm. again, it fit.
It did.
I still think it's the weakest of the Connery Bond films, but then it evolves. This character has evolved because it's been around for 50 years.
Absolutely. And one more thing about Bond.
Please.
Because I am a costumer and I'm always thinking about
who is your favorite? Yeah, I would say what is your favorite costume piece in a Bond film, male and female?
Oh, now that's double rough. That is a tough call. I do love a man in a kilt. So in Majesty's Secret Service, I do enjoy that. There are a lot of beautiful dresses, and there are a lot of dresses that I have issue with.
And Shirley Eaton in gold paint.
Well, the gold paint, I actually do really love that. I think that's terrific. But I am super obsessed with James Bond's footwear because I'm telling you.
There's a website for this.
Any... particularly gentlemen, but any person I know, if you ask them to wear a dress shoe, any shoe that's not a flip-flop, a sneaker, or maybe for dressy, a hiking boot, they cry like infants. Oh, no, it's uncomfortable. And Bond was running around doing action sequences in dress shoes, and all I think about when he's running around and getting on elevators and hanging on and jumping out of planes is... he's doing that in a hard leather sole. I don't buy it. I get really distracted by it. It might just be me.
You mentioned my footwear earlier. I'm wearing summer shoes. I wear black socks and for more formal affairs.
Oh dear.
But no, I have dress shoes. It's fine.
Oh dear. Well, but I'm willing to bet you don't trot them out, but when you have to, and you probably are not doing a lot of action sequences in them.
And
no swimming, running, jumping.
I'm also not playing baccarat with eccentric trillionaires trying to take over the world.
Well, that would be more fun.
Thank you, dear. Yeah. All right. So anyway, this won't be the last time we bring up Bond. But it's funny because I got the Blu-ray collection earlier this year. Thank you.
I need to borrow that.
Thank you, coupon from a certain chain establishment that sells used stuff. But nice. I was going through those. Right now, I'm about ready to get into Timothy Dalton land. Once I get
Oh, that's rough.
I know.
That's rough.
I need to give it another shot.
Oh.
The recurring bit, of course, is he's not having fun. I want to see if that's still true.
The one, and forgive me, which is the one that's like an extended and not very good episode of Miami Vice?
Well, that's License to Kill. That's a revenge film. It's not a Bond film. It's a revenge film.
I love a revenge film. I do not care for that one.
Yeah, so that'll be... So yeah, anyway, I will get to Living Daylights and License to Kill later. So, all right. We're going to go quickly to over at the drive-in, really. When was the last time you were at a drive-in?
Oh, gosh. More than a decade ago, sure.
Do you remember what you saw?
I don't. I remember that it wasn't good. It was just like whatever was on. It might have been something like I don't know.
Well, nobody shows Wild Strawberries and, you know, La Dolce Vita at a drive-in.
You know, I'm not necessarily even looking for that. I would be very happy with a grindhousey situation at a drive-in. You know, give me something that Robert Rodriguez is behind and I'm all up in that. But I think it was just like, you know, a Garfield movie or something stupid. But I wanted to go to the drive-in. And tell me what's going on at the drive-in.
All right, here we go. Where
am I going?
And have you ever had an odd pairing at a drive-in? That's my other one. And that's usually for folks of a certain age where you just have. And I remember in the early 80s, it was Arthur and 10. Now, I know because they were both Dudley Moore films, but I thought you really want the kids to fall asleep by the time 10 comes rolling around. And also the fact that one film was 2 years older than the other. That doesn't happen nowadays.
Yeah.
There are two new films. So, you know, in a way, what we do here is we find a link to why in the hell are you pairing these things up?
Yeah.
So anyway, and like right out of the gate, we have at the Tibbs Drive-In. On screen one, we have The Hitman's Bodyguard and Kidnap. Action films with African-American people in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, The Hitman's Bodyguard does do a poster of the bodyguard. Ha ha.
Okay, that's kind of funny.
Of Sam Jackson, sort of funny. Being carried by Ryan Reynolds. I'm sure
like
you've
that.
Dreamt that, but anyway. Screen two. I forgot this was coming out. I've not seen it. I'm afraid I'm going to nitpick at it, but Birth of the Dragon, the film, a feature film about the making of Enter the Dragon and unleashing the legend as Bruce Lee, along with Girls Trip. Okay.
I don't understand the connection. You know, I am cautious about that because I'm a big fan of kung fu movies, of course, of Bruce Lee. Although I admit my favorite is Gordon Liu.
Gordon Liu, that's fine.
Gordon
Liu's wrong
my
with
fave.
That.
But this one, I see the ads and I'm not sure about this one.
I have a feeling list will be compiled of what's not correct.
Yeah.
And that's going to bother
that's
me.
That's true.
And who's playing John Saxon and who's playing Jim Kelly. But anyway, we'll see. Screen three, Logan Lucky and Annabelle Creation.
Yeah.
Sure. And then on screen four, they're both animated. Leap and The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature.
Good
yeah, that's the over there.
Too.
Sure. Over at the Skyline in Shelbyville. It all depends again on when you're listening to this show. But the Super Monster Movie Fest is happening.
Let's see.
The 25th, that already happened. So tonight, The Blob, the original Blob.
Yes.
War of the Worlds.
Excellent.
Wait a second. Are you kidding?
What?
I believe the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
With Donald Sutherland?
With Donald Sutherland and the hair and The Last Moment and Leonard Nimoy. And then wrapping things up from 1982, The Thing. So
nobody has better hair game than Kurt Russell. Give me some Snake Plissken era, The Thing era, Kurt Russell,
That's great hair. That's true. He still has great hair today, actually.
He does. I love grizzled Kurt Russell.
Who
I'm
doesn't?
A fan. I'm a fan, yeah.
Do you know, it's funny you mentioned that because on Blu-ray this week, the big title is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Sure.
Which I enjoyed. It's not as funny as the last one, but you have a sequel, a giant sequel with character development.
Yeah.
And that's always good. Kurt Russell is in it. He is Chris Pratt's dad. He's also a planet. Have you seen the second one?
I haven't seen the second
one,
no.
Then you are going to enjoy this. The one quibble I have with the film, besides not being as funny, and that's really not a quibble, that's just a thing. But there's the very first scene in the film is the origin of how his parents got together.
Uh-huh.
So you have... apparently they took Kurt Russell and they made him up like it's 1979.
There's
the 70s Kurt Russell hair, which I now know
like computer wore tennis
you're a fan.
Shoes.
A little older. So we're looking into he'd
Snake
already
Plissken-ish.
Done Elvis, getting ready for Snake Plissken.
Gotcha. That's a sweet spot.
And it looks like there's a little a little bit of foundation done to smooth out the face a little bit because. But what cracked me up, so they did a hell of a job making him look like 70s Kurt Russell. They did nothing to adjust sounding like Kurt, because he sounds like today's Hateful Eight Kurt Russell.
Right.
You couldn't take a little... I've been in studios. You couldn't, not auto-tune, but you couldn't clean that up a little bit to soften it, to make him, but yeah, that's a minor quibble. And if he was here, he would punch me in the head.
I'd pay good money to see that, just FYI. I love you and I don't want you to get punched in the head, but I would pay money to
see
that.
If it's for Pledge Drive on TV, no fun getting hit on radio.
WFYI, take my money.
But anyway, that's a minor quibble, but that's the first scene. So you've gotten
excellent.
You've gotten a taste of that. So
excited.
But anyway, right. That is so. That's anyway. That's the only really well. That's the only title of no. That's not true. Criterion on Blu-ray is put out another great dance film or not dance film, a great date film, Sid and Nancy.
Oh, I do love that
so,
one.
Because...
What about the Blaze of Glory?
I look like Stevie Nicks. I can't say what you really
said.
No,
you can't say it.
Sad. This was before we knew, like, everyone's looking at Gary Oldman going, who is that?
Yeah.
But there are some of my favorite romantic films, and it is a romantic film. It's a punk, dreary romantic film, but the... You know, it's a guy
story
and a girl. It's a guy and a girl who fall in love. But and the title, you know, you have to in the pitch, you have to add to it. Just so happens. It just so happens they're cowboys and men. It just so happens it's Peter O'Toole and somebody a fourth of his age. It just so happens it's Sid Vicious and his wife.
Yes.
You know, and so it is directed by Alex Cox, of course, and then it is garish and it is beautiful at the same time.
Oh, I love it.
It brings punk rock. Have a soul and a heart at times, whether they want to admit to it.
Well, it does.
And this is an example of
that. Remind me of the year that that one came
86.
Out. 86. Okay, 86. So during that time...
The PIL era.
That's right. I still have my button on the same leather jacket. But during that time, that was a really important one because... if you were an oddball punk rock kid, as I was, actually, I was more goth aligned. But, you know, the goth girls dated the punk rock boys. So there we are.
Yep.
I was punk rock adjacent. And we didn't see a lot of our culture and life reflected in media. And so this was one of the rare opportunities. And it was a legitimate film.
It was not that culture was not treated as a sitcom punchline. I'm looking at Dobie Gillis. I'm looking at anything that made fun of the beat, the beat movement, hippies.
Correct.
Yeah, even disco to a certain degree. But yeah, absolutely, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So good one. Oh, excellent.
So yeah, but anyway, just a reminder at the Skyline in Shelbyville. Let's recap at. Okay, here we go.
Some sweet monster movies.
No kidding. Night. Okay. I'm getting you go to the sky. By the way, skylinedriving.com. But yeah, The Blob at 9 o'clock, War of the Worlds at 11, Invasion of the Body Snatchers at 1, The Thing at 3, and then from 2005, Call of Cthulhu. Is that right? Yeah.
Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, that's the 25th. Anyway, go to the Skyline Drive-In and check
that
out. So that's there as part of the Super Monster Movie Festival. Sammy Terry should be there as well.
Yay!
Give him our regards. Also, if you are a fan, excuse me, if you are a fan of Svengoolie on MeTV, it was he is now going to be on Saturday nights at 8 o'clock. So I need to check the calendar. Actually, yeah, hot programming. Key action, but he's now on 8 o'clock on MeTV.
I think that truly the only job that I'm actually qualified for, perhaps, is to be a horror movie host. I love Svengoolie. Of course, I loved Sammy Terry. I grew up here in Indianapolis.
Right.
His autographed photo is one of my prized possessions. I adore it. And I'm not kidding when I tell you that in my phone right now, there is an alarm set. So that I don't miss the time change on Svengoolie.
Nice. So that's going to be happening Saturdays.
Yeah.
I think this weekend.
Get your rubber chickens.
I believe what they're showing is.
Yeah, what's this week?
According to MeTV.com, Murders in the Rue Morgue.
Oh, okay.
So that is happening.
Sure.
So be on the lookout for that. All right, we got to the Blu-rays already. IU Cinema. So if you head down to Bloomington, and again, this depends on when you're listening to the show. If you are listening on Saturday, you still have half an hour or so to make it down at 3 o'clock for a part of their Cine Kids series at 3 o'clock, The Princess Bride.
Oh.
So hope, and anybody who was at last night's screening at IU Cinema, I would love to hear about it. Last night they showed Slapshot, Clerks, and The Princess Bride.
Oh, shut up.
At midnight.
I can't believe I missed that.
I know.
The Hanson brothers.
Oh, yeah. 7 o'clock Saturday night, the International Art House series, the documentary from earlier this year, Whose Streets? Tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Flowers, and then at 6:30 p.m., Who's Streets. Monday, August 28th, 3 o'clock at IU Cinema. This is part of the Monday Matinee Classics at 3 o'clock, 1939's The Women.
Oh, one of my favorites. That's George Cukor.
Yes, it is.
Oh,
and
so
half the female
Rosalind Russell.
In Joan Crawford.
Everybody go.
Everybody. That's don't miss. Mm-hmm. And then 7 o'clock on Monday the 28th, Dear White People, the film, not the series. Tuesday, August 29th, Lucky Them from 2013. Thursday, August 31st, The Off Hours at 7 o'clock. Friday, September 1st, the Megan Griffith's lecture at 3 p.m., and then her films Eden at 6:30 p.m., and then Megan Griffith presents at 9:30 p.m., again, a date film, We Need to Talk About Kevin with Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton, yes.
Oh, my gosh. And, anybody who has a kid, this film is a real kick to the chest.
I don't have a kid, and I still feel like it was a kick to the chest. Yeah, that is rough. And, of course, I do love the Tilda Swinton. She's in one of my favorite vampire movies of all time.
Which one is?
Only Lovers Left
Only
Alive.
Lovers Left, yes. One of your finer Detroit vampire movies with Tom Hiddleston.
You got it.
Anton Yelchin. Like, and filmed in really broke, decrepit Detroit.
Which is beautiful, yeah. For me, being an aging goth, trademark, the whole Twilight, all of the new vampires do not do a thing for me.
Right.
To me, there are only a few appropriate vampire movies, and they include The Hunger.
Yeah.
Only Lovers Left Alive. And What We Do in the Shadows.
That film made Ed Johnson-Ott's top five.
It's an excellent movie.
I need to rewatch it again because I think there were a couple things. I think vampire jokes at that point, and I think these were vampire jokes I thought that came out because of Twilight. And we had already seen, well, some of us had already seen Vampire Suck, which nobody needs.
Yeah, I did not
see that. So I thought it was a little dated as far as the pop culture.
Okay.
But if you look at it, not so much as a vampire spoof, but a spoof on roommates.
Absolutely.
Slightly. So I need to give it another shot because I know you're the second person I've come across recently that has raved about that film.
I have to say, if you're a fan, and I know you are, of the Christopher Guest movies.
Yeah, it does have that feel.
It has that vibe to it.
Yep.
And while I acknowledge that there was a lot of saturation of cheesy vampire jokes and such at the time, this one felt utterly different to me. And it was also a sweet character study. There is a sweet romance.
Yeah, there is.
There is real conflict between the roommates that I think any of us
can... There's a flat meeting.
Oh, my God.
He's 8,000 years old.
He doesn't need to come to the flat meeting. There are the usual arguments over dishes, although the dishes look different. And there's just really great stuff happening in that one.
Bodies with Sharpies written with your name funny. Written on them so nobody will take it that it's yours.
So funny. Yeah. I encourage you to revisit that one.
Okay, I will. All right, I want to get to Dead People We Like because we never have time for Dead People
sure.
We Don't Like. Now, there's no real way to say this, but Dick Gregory died first.
Yes.
So, and I know he got overshadowed a little bit by Mr. Lewis, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, comic and activist Dick Gregory passed away on August 19th at the age of 84. Now, not a whole lot of films, and that's okay, but he was a part of a 1967 film called Sweet Love Bitter, a loose feature account of Charlie Parker's last years. And a look at the 1960 scene in New York. So
you know, I've not seen that, but that's immediately going on the list.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that is out there. He was also an executive producer on his documentary, I Am Dick Gregory. And yeah, he was a bathroom attendant and a hot chick. So he also did an episode of Reno 911.
Wait a minute. I've seen all of those a million times. In what capacity?
The blind panhandler. Two episodes.
Shot it.
That's Dick Gregory.
Okay, going back through those. Wow, interesting.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you.
So, and then of course, yeah, that was, and then was it 2 days later?
The next day, yeah.
Jerry Lewis passed. Now, all right. One cannot deny Jerry Lewis's contribution to comedy, to filmmaking and to his contributions, you know, with the telethons. I think he's a great example at times of can you separate the artist from the art? Because what happened, and my buddy Lou Harry kind of brought this up, of there were a lot of people tap dancing on his grave when he died, and I remember posting what I just said, that right. there is, you know, you can thank / blame him for Jim Carrey, Adam Sandler, the clown comics that you know owe him a certain degree Eddie Murphy is the same way, let's not forget that. And by the way, and I remember ending the post with, and by the way, Jerry, women are funny.
Yeah. And so, thank you, yes.
Yeah, that's rough.
He's a relic of a different era, and that's
totally,
the thing. And
yeah.
I think that when taken as a whole, remember there was a time when he and I'm more of a Dino gal myself.
Of course you are.
But at the time, those two were so famous.
Yeah, ridiculous
and
famous.
I mean, like crazy famous, and their cultural impact was enormous
mm-hmm.
in a time that was obviously media was very different then. And he was very young. And so the ego that comes from that kind of thing, the hubris that comes from that, I think is real.
Yep.
And that it's a mixed bag, and most humans are complex. I'm not a fan, but I also recognize the contributions, the influence. And when I think about another human being, I think, well, yeah, flawed, not my favorite perhaps, but an interesting sort of larger than life mm-hmm. scope and his own sort of ego. The thing that interests me most, and I think a lot of people, is the whole mythology of the day the clown died.
The day the clown cried.
Cried. Cried.
I'm going to get to that
okay.
Because we shouldn't forget, you mentioned Dean and Jerry, how they were just ridiculous. Ridiculous famous in the 50s.
Really famous. Yeah.
I mean, from nightclubs to movies, with films like Partners and Artists and Models and all that. And we I think a lot of people credit obviously the buddy cop films to 48 Hours, but I would think it would even go even further back with the likes of Hope and Crosby and Martin and Lewis.
Sure.
And yes,
comedy duos.
Right. Basically comedy
right.
duos.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have two funny guys or at least, you know, a straight funny guy and then a sidekick / even funnier guy. I mean, they created that template.
Yeah. Odenkirk and Cross.
Totally.
Even now
exactly.
come from that. Yeah.
And then for Jerry to go out on his own and have an iron grip on his own work, which we all should, you know, I think we all kind of wish
aspire
we had.
To,
we own
yes.
the rights and the to everything. And, you
forward
know,
thinking.
Right. And, you know, we never forget the Nutty Professor. The original Nutty Professor right. is still.
Disorderly Orderly.
Yeah. Cinderfella, you know, the errand boy, the ladies' man, Cinder, you know, all of those. And yeah, there, and then. Seeing that transition of the stuff in the 60s, stuff that he was directing in the late 60s and appearing in films like Way, Way Out and Don't Raise the Bridge, Lower the Water. And he directed One More Time for Dean and for Sammy. Which Way to the Front? Yeah. So
rough.
And now we get to what you said from 1972, The Day the Clown Cried, which is the holy grail for cine nerds.
Absolutely.
This is a film, if you don't know about it, and of course somebody created the Criterion cover, which I immediately posted on Facebook.
I saw that.
So Jerry Lewis wanted to make a series. This was going to be his big break, his big dramatic break. He was going to make a serious film about a clown who is taken into the death camps of the Holocaust, and his job is to lead the children and play as they go to the chambers. And what happened was he fought with the financiers, he fought with the producers, and he basically took his ball and went home. Only in this case, he took all of the prints and buried them, hid them. And the only person of note that has seen this is Harry Shearer.
Right.
And basically what he has said is, so imagine this, and I can't quote what Shearer said.
Oh, yeah,
but,
no, I wrote
but,
that down.
Yeah, but imagine Life is Beautiful with every wrong note.
The tone.
The action. And I remember in a book, a very influential book in my youth, The Golden Turkey Awards, written by the Medved brothers. And this was a film that was nominated for the worst film you
never saw.
Never
came out.
Well, that's
yeah.
it. It was that. It was, not Way, Way Out, but there was a couple others. But the film that won that category, and I actually own it, is Billy Jack Goes to Washington.
Oh,
yeah.
I may have to borrow that.
I don't know. But and then, of course, I think it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that Lewis was going to donate prints of The Day the Clown Cried. And honestly, I've not verified if it's supposed to be 10 years after he died or 10 years after he donated that people will be able to see this film.
Excellent.
So that's kind of where we're at.
Have you heard about the Patton Oswalt thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Patton Oswalt, my beloved, who is my celebrity exception. I am deeply devoted to him. And I'm very happy for him and his new bride-to-be.
Yep.
But apparently he got the script, which is available online for anyone who, like, you can just read the script to The Day the Clown Cried. But apparently for his birthday 1 year, I think he was 27 or 28, Patton got the script and had Bob Odenkirk and David Cross do a stage reading of it, which, that is a pretty intense scenario, and I would love to have seen it.
Yes. So anyway, it is out there. And then, because I remember in the 80s, there was a small surge resurgence of Lewis who tried making films in the 80s like he was in the 50s. Well, not that, but he did Hardly Working. There was a Slapstick of Another Kind based on a Vonnegut novel. That looks nothing like the Vonnegut novel.
Wow.
Cracking Up, also known as Smorgasbord in some words. But no, if you get a chance also, he's great as Jerry Langford in The King of Comedy, Martin Scorsese's film with Robert De Niro. This is a film from 1983. De Niro plays Rupert Pupkin in a failing bad comic who's trying to break into the business, and he does so by kidnapping a Johnny Carson-esque host played by Jerry Lewis. And I've said this before about actors like Jim Carrey and Adam Sandler and to a degree Will Ferrell. There are certain comic actors that directors will just let the camera roll and they can do whatever they want and they'll take the best one. And then you have 19 outtakes that you can look at on the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Lewis was his own director for the most part, so he had control over that. But when you have a real director working with you, like Paul Thomas Anderson and Adam Sandler, Scorsese and Lewis. So there's a couple physical moments with Jerry Lewis, but it's very close to the vest. It's a very rooted performance. It's something, you know, Lewis should have done a long time ago if he had trusted somebody, another filmmaker, but I don't think he did.
Again, ego and hubris.
Right. Yep. And then later in years, films like Funny Bones, where he plays Oliver Platt's father. Platt plays a comic who's under the shadow of his dad. Films like Max Rose. I know The Trust came out last year. But anyway, and everybody has, well, not everybody, but there's a lot of people who have stories about encountering this man. Lou Harry interviewed him, and it went splendidly. I know somebody who saw him at an airport and was a giant crank. There's a famous interview of him being interviewed and he doesn't want to answer the questions. So, and he's also, you know, he was also in his 80s. So it's interesting that on this retrospect of remembering both sides of this man on stage, on screen and off.
Full scope of any human.
Yep.
You know, it's complicated and not always hilarious.
Exactly. So, all right. We got a few minutes left.
Yeah.
I did finish, and we were talking earlier about the Mr. Science Theater stuff. Have you been watching the reboot?
I love it. I'm a big Jonah Ray fan.
Okay.
I'm an enormous podcast listener. In fact, I just finished the new season of You Must Remember This, Karina Longworth's incredible incredible film podcast. And if you're not listening to it, you owe it to yourself to go and just burn through all of them. It's wonderful. But Jonah Ray from a lot of podcasts, you know, I knew him. And I was always an MST3K fan, of course. And so I've been thrilled with the new ones. I think it's great. Again, my beloved Patton Oswalt. I love Felicia Day.
Yep.
Harmar Superstar's song is terrific. And I think their choices are great. To me, it feels like, it's just new episodes.
It is.
And it's terrific. I didn't get a chance to see the live tour, much to my regret.
I know, same here.
But I think it's terrific. Big fan.
Well, I've enjoyed them as well. Yeah. The fact that we have some incarnation of them still happening. I bought it, had it yesterday, a place that mailed it to me. But that place. But I finally experienced Cinematic Titanic.
Oh, you know, I have not. Do you recommend?
Yes. Shout Factory, who used to have the video distribution rights to Mystery Science Theater. And it's funny because it's the same artwork.
Yeah.
But it is Mary Jo Peel, Trace Ballou, Frank Conniff, J. Elvis Weinstein, and Joel Hodgson. Weinstein, sorry. Joel Hodgson. So it's the five of them riffing. And there's some studio stuff, and then there's some live shows. The live shows are particularly good.
Oh, good.
But what's interesting watching, and I've had Mary Jo on the show before. I had Joel on the show many years ago, and I've had Kevin on the show, which has been cool. Welcome to the name dropping portion of the show. But the difference in rhythm between the current Mystery Science Theater, between Riff Tracks, and between Cinematic Titanic and Cinematic Titanic, I know the recorded shows about a decade ago, and then live shows. I can't remember if they were that far back. I think they were that far back, or there were also some performances from last year or the last 2 years. But the rhythm of all three are different. I think the current incarnation of Mystery Science Theater, they're fast. There's a lot of them. They're shooting. You're shooting a lot of bricks. And the fact that Cinematic Titanic, they've all known each other for a long time.
Yeah.
And the Riff Track guys have known each other for a long time. And you can sense that. It's like listening to a jazz combo.
Sure.
So anyway, I would recommend it. They're all, the Cinematic Titanic stuff, especially the live ones, they're all late 60s, early 70s. I think these were films that Shout Factory owned, maybe. So they were kind of saying, cheap to get. But, you know, they're including a, listen to that, including a Filipino vampire movie that's supposed to be set in South America, and there are Filipino actors in blackface.
Oh.
There is the Al Edmondson film. It used to be called The Dynamite Brothers, and this is called East Meets Watts. If imagine the Defiant Ones with Bruce Lee and Jim Kelly, only neither of them. There's some doozies in this one.
Yeah.
And a rattler. And it's also cute because there are little riffs to past other shows. And in fact, one in particular where it's an astronaut film, and their guys are looking outside the portal, and they said, this looks like people watching Manos. Little things like that.
Manos being really the ultimate.
Yes,
of all.
And yes, I'm a terrible father. I know, but yes, there is a Watch Out for Snakes. Yeah, tribute
I was
in
wondering
Rattlers.
If there was going to be.
So yeah, I highly recommend it. It's six disc, 12 films on Shout Factory, and I'm hoping to get Mary Jo back on the show to talk about riffs she did over a decade ago, and you know, geeky guys are asking her about those. You have to remember that sometimes is they probably wrote it and said it once or twice, and then that was it.
And then we've watched it 5,000 times.
10 years later, we come back and hit them with this. So yeah, that's fun. All right, lady, once more, hit your website and your social media before
Absolutely.
We get out of here.
So my website is taffetav.com. That's TAFFETAV. www.mycostumework.com. You can see examples of my costume work on beautiful bodies there. On the Instagrams and the Twitters, I am also Taffeta V. And on Facebook, I am Taffeta the Wardrobe Mistress. And upcoming, I will be judging a costume contest at Starbase Indies Science and Star Trek themed convention over, you stop laughing over there.
I'm not laughing. With you, dear. With you.
That's right. Over Thanksgiving weekend. And then after that, I will have some zines that I produce in the zine fests in New Orleans and in Albuquerque.
Thank you, Moneypenny.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Or go to Fringe. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!